Hi, and welcome to the Digital Future Podcast, episode 2 with Katie and Anthony. This week we thought we'd do something a bit different. We've been out on the road and we've been to the World of Learning exhibition at the NEC. So coming up on this episode, we give our thoughts after day one of the exhibitors and seminars we've been to. Then we're going to have some interviews that we managed to catch at the exhibition with the people that were delivering the seminars we get to see over the 2 days. Then we just wrap up with a few final thoughts and look forward to the Learning Technology Show coming up in February. So enjoy this podcast. Okay, so World of Learning today, Katie. I think it's my 5th or 6th maybe, but your first time. So what were your first impressions of the World of Learning conference?
I think it was broadly what I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So lots of different stands with exhibitors. The thing that I picked up about it the most is that it gives you a really good sense check, sort of a temperature check of what are the main things coming out in learning and development
at
the moment.
Absolutely, and it's certainly something I've seen over the last few years is there tends to be a bit of a prevalent theme, whether it be sometimes everybody's got a new fantastic e-learning platform and other times it's something different. So what did you think was the big theme this year?
Well, I think there was digital learning is obviously a real trend. So there was a couple of seminars that we will talk about in a little mm-hmm. while around gamification, around video branching. And actually that theme continues probably more strongly tomorrow. So it was really great to see some of the digital learning that we're actually working on in Mitchells & Butlers coming through as strongly as it did today.
There was certainly a big emphasis on gaming, gamification, and I think even in some of the non-digital stuff, there was a lot of gameplay going on. So we saw 3 or 4 exhibitors who had board games and card mm-hmm. games and things like that. So that whole gaming element of learning seems to be coming through in a number of ways now.
What was quite interesting, I thought, was that there seemed to be a bit of a dichotomy between digital and board games, with the board games tending to be around well-being. So it tended to be around well-being or diversity or some of what, I don't know, I suppose you would call the sort of softer side of HR, whereas the digital sort of gaming training tended to be focused around compliance. So I don't quite know what that's about, but that was certainly something that I picked up on.
I think that's a really good point. And I hadn't seen some of that softer stuff done in a gaming way before, which I thought was quite interesting. I thought the company that were doing the diversity game, I thought was very interesting. I have seen games like that before, but they've more been more traditional kind of commercial management type things where it's about commercial decision making, whereas this just seemed to be a really good way of facilitating what could be quite a difficult conversation for people. So I thought that was quite impressive.
And I think that actually that's potentially an underpinning theme as well of the exhibitors that I've seen today, because there were several, I think we walked past a talk on coaching actually, and there were several stands talking about that difficult conversation. So I wonder whether or not actually the theme of coaching is coming through quite strongly as well,
but a little bit
less directly.
And certainly in previous years, companies that were offering coaching services or coaching support, it was very much around executive coaching and, you know, the kind of nice, touchy-feely thing that we used to see a few years ago. You're absolutely right. Where we're seeing coaching now is about tackling performance issues. Yeah. It's about that real hard line, let's move things forward, let's have those tricky conversations and take it from there. Interesting.
I don't know whether it's just that because we had... you know, we were specifically looking for digital content rather than platforms and host solutions. But so it may well have been what I was looking for. But I felt like there was less LMS type solutions there and much more focus on the content of what you're actually training, so the actual learning content, which I was pleased to see actually.
I think you're right. I think after a long time of competing LMS as learning management systems, people trying to say, you know, ours is better than theirs because we've got better reporting and this and that and the other, I think we've probably reached a maturity level now where pretty much everyone has a platform and they're probably happy with it. So it is shifting towards, okay, well, what can you do with that platform now? How can you use that? And therefore, I think you're right, it's more about what can you put on there? How can you make your content lift itself above the platform itself?
And that probably lends itself well into the two seminars that we that we attended today. So the first one being the one around engaging gaming with Sponge. So what did you take away from that session?
I thought it was really good. I thought Louise gave a really good session and really outlined it pretty well. Obviously, we've spoken to Sponge in the past and we've seen some of their content, which I have to say is pretty good. They do some interesting stuff and tend to pick different topic areas that perhaps you wouldn't have thought about. I really liked the categorisation of the different kinds of gamification that we talked about on the last podcast, around whether it's structural gamification, the whole points and leaderboards, or whether it's the content itself that you turn into a game. I thought that was an interesting point, and I think a lot of the audience reacted quite well to that. I think that was a real point of clarity. But I thought what was really interesting was that kind of four steps to great game learning that she talked about, where leading in with engagement, which I think is absolutely critical, and talking about how you need to have a strong story, a good narrative, a hook that gets people interested in the game per se. I thought that was a good lead in.
Yeah, I mean that quadrants that she showed with engagement, exploration, autonomy and progression, that really is the sort of four cornerstones of our digital strategy.
Absolutely.
And what I my ears pricked up at that bit, because I thought for us we really need to be clear about what our underpinning principles are and really stick to them. So hearing her echo what the linchpin of our strategy is, hearing her echo that in that on that slide, just sort of renewed my confidence in it, actually. It made me think, absolutely, we've got the engaging ideas for the platform, we already know about the autonomy. But we really have to make sure that we are allowing that level of exploration in each of the games and allowing that progression to be really transparent.
And I thought that linked really well with the talk we saw later around branching, in that there's a tension between allowing your learners to explore and have autonomy versus what if they don't see something that you really think is important for them to see. And I think that was a really valid point that one of the audience raised there. And I think something we need to consider when we're designing is, if it's so critical that it's a non-negotiable, you're going to have to see this content, how do we weave that into the narrative, into the game, so that it's not just there in your face, read this to progress. How do we build that? And I thought that was a really interesting challenge.
Well, one of the demonstrations that she showed there was one of the sort of decision pathways that you can follow with the branch scenario might immediately lead to a closed door.
Yeah.
So you immediately have to go back to the beginning. And Sam was suggesting that signals a really wrong answer. So you're almost, by the fact that you're not allowed to progress in the game any further, that gives you an alert to how far off the mark you are. But again, with going back to an earlier point, that's a tension, because the branching scenarios that we're seeing at the moment are talking about compliance training.
Yep.
And actually, in our strategy, we've applied that technology to a slightly different element of training, looking a bit more at behaviour.
Yeah, so that was certainly the key area we wanted to look at, was helping people to explore different behaviours and seeing how they would play out, rather than, I totally get why you would use branching for compliance training, because it's a far more interesting way of doing it. But I think it's more authentic to deal with behaviours, because I think you're more likely to maybe choose different pathways when it comes to behaviours, rather than something that generally is fairly black and white with compliance and health and safety kind of stuff.
And I think it's what your comment as we walked out of that seminar around, when you're dealing with compliance training and branching scenarios, you're sort of looking for a right answer, a wrong answer, and a partially right answer.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, I suppose the formula that we would be using in behavioural training would be good, better, best.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That helps to really drive excellence and drive some of those soft skills to leadership level.
Yeah, and I can certainly see some really interesting branching scenarios when it comes to guest interaction. And I think for line managers as well, going back to the difficult conversation, the performance coaching, maybe there's a way of showing, actually,
you could say that, but this is likely to be what would happen if you did that. Or maybe now is the time to push it a little bit further. Now's the time to have that last conversation that really nails this issue so it doesn't bubble under the surface. So, yeah, I thought both of those talks were really quite interesting. I think we discussed that we didn't learn anything new, but that's probably indicative of where the industry is generally. We're probably in or ahead of the pack when it comes to this kind of thinking at the moment.
The level of research that we've done as well, I suppose, what was nice to see was that everything that we have been researching, nothing was contradicted.
No,
everything was reinforced with some really great visual examples. I mean, specifically our conversation with Dr. Mark Davis around user-generated content and actually how to put a little bit of a tactical strategy, I suppose, around how to upskill people so that you're getting the best type of user-generated content was, I'd say that he added to our thinking in that we have got a user-generated content strategy. We know what we're wanting from that. But what we potentially hadn't thought about was actually, do our people have the skills to create a great video, and how difficult would that be to disperse that skill and upskill the right people to do that?
Yeah, and I thought they've carved themselves quite an interesting niche there, because it's almost gamekeeper turned poacher, really. You know, they are a video production company. That's what they do. That's their bread and butter. And they're kind of turning that on its head and saying, actually, you know, with the advent of some fantastic technology now, you don't need the greatest camera in the world. As long as you know some principles of how to video and how to edit, then actually you could probably do a lot of that yourself. So their service is offering training, whether it be face-to-face or e-learning, on how to create content, how to create video content. I thought that was really interesting. I've not seen anybody doing that so far.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure it's going to be an ongoing conversation with them, with our journey as well, and I'm looking forward to continuing tomorrow in day two, hearing a bit more about some of the specific gamification speakers.
Yeah, me too. So I think at the end of day one, quite energised, quite excited, really relieved to see different exhibitors with different products this year rather than the same old, same old. Really interested in some of the seminar topics. I think they really speak to our strategy, and that's great to see. A few exhibitors I want to have another chat with tomorrow, see if we can pick their brains a little bit. Some more networking opportunities, I think. It was good to pick up with the e-learning network today and have a chat with those guys.
It's actually probably worth mentioning Learning Live.
The
fact that, I mean, you said that wasn't there in previous years.
No, the whole Learning Design Live was new this year, so they've always had seminar content, but it's been more of the sort of side stage stuff or the full-on conference, which is a paid-for event. So I thought it was a really good way of doing it this year.
There's some really interesting speakers, actually, and even more so tomorrow for us.
Good, so good day one. Looking forward to day two, and we shall continue this conversation after that. So bye for now, stick with us, and there'll be more to come.
So on day two, we decided that it would be a really good idea if we could have a chat with some of the people that we'd seen speaking. So Katie and I managed to get hold of Sam Yates from Unicorn Training to talk about branching scenarios. Here's Katie's interview with Sam.
So I'm at the World of Learning with Samantha Yates, who did a talk yesterday on branching scenarios. So Sam, can you just give us a quick overview on what video branching is?
Well, what I was saying in the talk yesterday is that branching is not just restricted to videos, and it actually can be applied in the bog standard e-learning course. So what I was trying to get across yesterday is how to start from scratch if you've never done it before, and look at the storyboarding side of it before even thinking about the actual practical build side of it.
Brilliant. And what specific sort of learning objectives do you think lend themselves really well to branching scenarios?
I think branching can be used on pretty much any subject. It's just you've got to be quite clever with it and really look at the learning objectives before you start. Our core bulk of the work that we do is compliance training, which can throw up quite a few challenges because traditionally SMEs are quite reserved and they want their learner to see absolutely everything, which obviously won't work with a branching scenario. So there are going to be challenges with different subjects, but generally there's a way of bringing in some sort of case study or scenario in there. So the whole point of branching is to put put your learner in a situation where they have to make a decision.
Yeah.
So you can do that on a multiple choice question, or you could do that in an interactive bit of video.
Yeah.
There's lots of different options that you can choose on that.
What I found really interesting from the talk yesterday was that you were sort of almost able to grade the response as to how far away from the correct answer they were by stopping progression through the branching. So if they get something entirely wrong, it's essentially like falling off a cliff and you're not able to do to go any further with that.
Yeah, I think that's a key concept of branching design, is that you have this scoring system on your questions. So whether you're doing it on a very simple multiple choice question, whether you're doing it something more complex than that, just by grading your choices that you're giving your learner, will help you tailor the feedback and they can see the different consequences. So you can have your all singing, all dancing, I got everything correct answer.
Yeah.
So you then give them a really positive consequence, and then there's one where they got it completely wrong and they're completely off track, and you're saying, right, okay, look, you're not on track with this subject, you need to go back.
Yeah.
Go back a few steps and maybe look at some information again before you try again.
And I think that for me is where the power of branching is in that sort of immediate feedback loop and being able to get that to get that information as you're going through the scenario. I think that's really
Absolutely.
Key.
And it makes it more lifelike as well, because you're giving them feedback and you're showing them consequences of the choices that they've made, rather than just giving them information and saying, right, now I'll answer another question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Putting them in that situation.
So you've been at World of Learning for 2 days now. How have you found the reception to branching scenarios?
Yeah, really good. I think there's a real mix of people that come to this conference. You've got some who are absolute beginners, some who've been doing it for years. And branching is the kind of subject that people think that they should be doing, but they think it's really complicated. Uh-huh. So I was trying to focus in the talk yesterday on the basics and the storyboarding basics. So not worrying too much about what authoring tool you're using or anything like that, but how to actually write it, how to storyboard it. And I think that's what people found really useful. So we had some really good feedback coming back and some really good conversations coming out of it.
Yeah, it absolutely made it feel like it was something that was really achievable just by using that quite
formula. It's taking that mystification away from it. It's one of those subjects that's always thrown around, but it doesn't have to be complicated.
Yeah.
So some of the examples I was showing were literally on one multiple choice thing.
Yeah.
And that's still an example of branching, because you're putting a learner in a situation asking them to make a decision.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much for your time,
you're
Sam.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks.
So after we spoke to Sam Yates, we spotted Mike Hawkyard sat in the corner, and so we went over to speak to him and asked him if he would spare a few moments to talk on the podcast, which I have to admit he was more than happy to do. Just between you and I, this is the second take we did with Mike. The first one we had to ditch because I kind of forgot to switch the mic on. Again, I'm playing sound guy, so it's Katie doing the interview.
Okay, so the big change in our industry is to go mobile and keep it short and snackable content. So the whole idea of playing a game in a bus queue is what it's all about for us. You've got to pick up, have some meaningful content, meaningful interaction in about 2 minutes to be able to level up, and then keep on playing it if you want, but we don't mind if you just access it again and again and again for a short period of time. Yeah. So don't try and make someone sit down for an hour and learn all this stuff, get you the messages in tiny small chunks. Yeah. And we think that's learning is all about, because otherwise you just forget stuff.
Yeah. So what would you say were some of the biggest pitfalls that we could fall into if we were trying to create a sort of learning game?
To force people into doing the learning.
Right, okay.
You've got to make them want to do the learning and reward them for doing the learning, because they'll enjoy it and they'll get more out of it. Because anything that is forced isn't fun, and it's got to be fun. So you get someone to play a game, and then you say, if you want the silver spoon of victory that'll help you beat your friends, all you need to do now is watch this video. And then if you watch the video, you'll get the silver spoon, you'll beat your friends, and you'll gloat about it. Lo and behold, everyone watches the video, they all get the silver spoon, now they want the fork of destiny. And to get the fork of destiny, you just have to answer these 10 questions correctly. And that way you'll engage everyone.
Yeah, brilliant. So you're talking about that you've got to make learning optional. How would we do that if some of the learning subject matter was sort of health and safety, so more compliant based?
Cool. So the first time you do it, you go through those questions. You've got to remove any obstacle you possibly can, and get they take it, they pass, and then where games can come into it is we can make you go back through it again and again and again. So say you had a question bank of 30 questions and you needed to get 10 right and you passed your test, because there's other questions there to make it random and fun. You've not seen 20 questions.
Yeah.
So they're all just sat there wasted. By us motivating you to go back and do it again, one question at a time, two questions at a time, you're seeing all this extra stuff, you're learning more, and we can just keep reminding you of the things you've learned. So after 10 sessions or 10 days of looking at it, you're much more likely to remember the stuff.
Yeah.
So yes, to some degree, we have to do certain things.
Yeah.
I totally understand that. But perhaps in the glorious future, we'll try and soften those rules a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's a target, it's an aim somewhere to get to. You're not going to be able to do it straight off the bat, but if you work towards things, you never know.
Brilliant. And one of the things that you spoke about just now was also around luck. So how important luck is in game design. And how would we maybe be able to incorporate some of that into a more corporate sort of learning game design?
Okay, so you're playing a game where you're running a pub.
Yeah.
And you're upgrading and doing these questions to win the Silver Spoon of Destiny or whatever I invented 5 seconds ago. And the fifth time you play it, lo and behold, you get Saturday afternoon off.
Right,
as
okay.
a special bonus for doing it. And you're one in a thousand people who randomly got that in the thing that teaches them, or when they come back to the game, they open the little egg kind of thing and there it is. And you think, wow, that's awesome. And the next time your friend goes in, they get a message from the CEO of the company going, top work, thank you so, so much for playing this and getting engaged and helping me build this company. You're where it's at. And they're like, did I see that? That's brilliant. And they get a special badge that no one else has got. And all of a sudden, luck just drives forward from them. And they go, oh, I want to play it again and see what happens next time.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing stuff that isn't always there, that my friends might not have seen. And it completes certain things. It's just luck rules in games.
So some of those examples is blurring the boundaries a bit between the virtual reality. So whether that's that you get, I don't know, in-game currency and the sort of normal reality of a conversation with the CEO or a real life Saturday afternoon off.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's quite key to blur those boundaries as well?
I think if you're employed by someone, you want to feel that the person employing you knows what motivates you.
Yeah.
And to see it in a game and to personalise it and to deliver it in a mechanism that you're motivated by.
So how have you found the World of Learning Conference?
To be honest, my talk was just now, so I've mainly wandered around it practicing in my head. clearly the best people I've met today was you.
Oh, thank you. I think we can finish on that note. Thank you so much.
That's my pleasure. Have a great day.
Thank you.
So we're getting towards the end of day two, Katie, and this afternoon we had to split up because there were two talks at the same time that we both wanted to go to. Yeah, we had a clash. It was like being at Glastonbury. I wanted to go to the main stage, Katie wanted to go to the folk field. So while I was listening to an interesting talk on open badging, you went to listen to Mike talking about gaming. So tell us all about that.
So we've just heard Mike give us a bit of an overview of what his talk was about. But one of the key things for me from that talk was it just really cements what we already spoke about at the very beginning when we were trying to create our digital strategy, which was that in order to create really great games, we should be working with a games designer, because we've got the learning theory, we understand the learning theory, we've done some research into the neuroscience behind why the learning would work. We then need to match up with a really key supplier that knows their stuff in the game design theory.
Yeah, and I think over the last 2 days, I think we've both spotted that there are learning companies playing at games, but in a lot of cases we've seen where it's not really a game, it's e-learning.
With a dice.
Yeah. And you know, it's the same old. Yeah. So.
And listening to Mike talking about it being snackable content, he went into quite a lot of detail in his talk about the point of engagement, the period of engagement, mm-hmm. the call to action, and that, and he was terming that as the gaming loop. That's the real structure, that's sort of the structural integrity of a game that will make people almost behave in an addictive way, playing it again and again and again. And that's the formula that we need so that they are interacting with our learning over and over and over again. And I'm not seeing that in some of the more traditional e-learning companies that have branched out into gamification. Mm-hmm. But I think that I think that Amuso is actually partnering with Unicorn Training. And it's that sort of partnerships that are going to generate really great learning games.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's that proper collaboration between expertise, whereas I think a lot of the learning companies have kind of taken what they think is gaming theory, layered it on top of what they were all doing, and then selling it back as, wow, look at this, it's new and exciting, and I'm not convinced it is.
Yeah, and so. I mean, interestingly, that Unicorn Training is the company that Sam Yates works for. So the branching scenarios which we've advocated for, you know, since we started looking at the strategy, I'd be really interested to see how the theory around the branching scenarios and all the game design theory integrates together to create what would just be a really immersive and interactive learning experience, I imagine.
Yeah, that could be quite a potent collaboration, I think. Okay. Cool.
So whilst I was with Mike in Mike's talk, you went to see a talk about open badging. How did that go?
I did. It was delivered by Andy Kirk from Totara, who is someone that I wanted to meet up with for a little while, because I think Totara are doing some quite interesting stuff, both with their platform and also recently with Totara Social that we've been looking at. But specifically today, he was talking about open badging and really how far it's come in the last 2 years since Mozilla launched it in 2013. So he started off with a bit of a recap about what badging is and talked about how there's that real range of possibilities with badging, that you could badge something very small or very large. So, you know, you could have a badge in chopping a lime and you could have a badge in level 4 food safety. You know, both of those two things can coexist. And that was, for me, the biggest part of it, is he talked a lot about this sort of micro-badging, micro-credentialing, he called it. And he talked about how the nursing industry are using this a lot. So they've broken down all of the things that a nurse needs to do into quite small detail, very much in the same way we've done with our capability framework. So it's really boxed off. And therefore, you can start to take those little bite-sized chunks, start to get accreditation for that. And then it's the combination of those micro badges that make the bigger badge. So it allows people to have lots of different pathways that have similar but different skill sets. Yeah. So I could certainly see an application in our business where there might be two people who do very similar jobs where 40 things they do are exactly the same. So they get the same 40 micro badges for those things.
Yeah.
But another 10 things they do are very different. So those 50 for that person forms their badge that works for them in their job role and equally in the other job role. And it gives us that granular differentiation between different people doing different things. So I thought that was really interesting. He talked about how well it had been received, how well it had been adopted, and how some of the big players have been using it for a little while. Disney are involved, the BBC, NASA, and how now it was starting, as things generally do, starting to cascade its way down into the corporate world. So I thought that was really quite interesting. And really just thinking about us in our business and how we might use badges to potentially signify certain events. So we could use badges to represent status, both in sort of finite job roles, but also we've talked lots about having different levels. So, you know, chef level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, depending on what learning that person happens to have done. And then how those badges might interrelate with each other. So if you've got a certain badge, that might unlock a new level of learning for you. Overall, an interesting conversation. Good to meet up with Andy at long last. I've been trying to have a word with him for a little while. Lots of stuff to take away, lots of stuff to think about, which for me has been really the theme of the 2 days. Lots of food for thought and lots of people talking about the sort of stuff that we've been thinking about for a little while.
So our next big exhibition or conference would be Learning Technologies in January, won't it?
It will be, actually, it's February this year. It's first week of February. Yeah, they've put it back a week. It's normally the last week. So, 3rd and 4th of February at Olympia London. And, that's generally where the big technology players start to kick in with what's new and exciting. So I think the world of learning is great from a wide scope of stuff. So you get technology providers, you get traditional content providers, yeah. there's venues and all sorts of stuff. Learning technologies does tend to narrow it down. There's often some really interesting demos of using new technologies, so I'm quite looking forward to that.
I'll be really looking forward to seeing, I mean, even in the months between now and then, to see what's changed and whether or not the trends change so quickly.
Absolutely.
Whether or not actually we're seeing the same representation of digital content in that conference will be really interesting.
Cool, so I think that's it from us. Been a long but fruitful 2 days.
Yeah.
Hope you've enjoyed listening to this. As always, get in touch if you want to hear more. And we'll see you on the next podcast.